بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Hijrat means to give up one's residence, to live in another land. But when the word hijrat is used in a Shari'i context, it means to leave one's land for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. Purely for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, to leave your land and to go and settle in a land where you would find it dini friendly. Overall, what will make this hijrat important and what will require you to make hijrat? That's one thing. And the second is, what is the reward? And the third is, what are the conditions that will qualify one to make hijrat, to give up his residence and to go live in exile, to live with a refugee status in another land? What will qualify you to leave up and give up your land to go and live elsewhere? So the rewards are great, as promised in the Quran Sharif. One reward is this, that Allah Ta'ala will promises you a better abode in the land that you are traveling towards. وَنُبَوِّئَنَّهُمْ فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنًا. So in the land that you are traveling to, Allah Ta'ala grants you and promises you a better abode. The second is this, وَلَأَجْرُ الْآخِرَةِ أَكْبَرُ. And the reward of the hereafter is even far greater. One is in this world and one is in the hereafter. And the third is this, that the land that you're going to be traveling to, people there will receive you with love and with respect. And the fourth is this, that this will continue with your generations to come. Because this is more or less what you are looking for, some sanctuary, and the sanctuary where you will be loved and respected. Like you feel comfortable in your land, and what makes you feel comfortable is that you enjoy people's love and you enjoy people's respect. So this makes you feel comfortable in the land that you are living in. So Allah Ta'ala promises you that if you're going to be living in another land, but for my sake, purely for my sake, for no material gain or for no other reason, but for my love, for my pleasure, then these are the things that I promise you. And shortly after that, we've seen the Sahaba Ikram leaving Makkah Mukarrama to settle in Abyssinia, Habash, or to settle in Medina Munawwara. So for a short transitory period, perhaps they had gone through some difficulty. But after that, those Sahaba Ikram that were living in financial constraints, they were very, very prosperous. Sahaba Ikram say that we came into Medina, and we came not as wealthy people, came here. And in spite of the constraints we were living in, the Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had encouraged us to do charitable works. Poor, destitute, orphans, etc. And we didn't have the wealth, and nor were we professional people. So what we would do is, because of the encouragement the Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had given us, we used to carry people's burdens, the weights on our backs, and go and deliver them. And in return for that, what we would get is 1-2 kilos of barley. That's all we would get. And in that little, we would give out a good portion into charity. We carried on in this manner. But in a few years, now we have become so wealthy that nearly all of us, I look at nearly all of us that we're working like this, became millionaires. وَلَا نَجِدُ لَهَا مَوْدِيًا إِلَّا التُّرَابِ. We don't find any place to keep that, but the outside of our home. It's so much that we can't even keep it within the house. You find a sahabi like Hazrat Abdul Rahman ibn Auf radiyallahu anhu, right? These people came in from Makkah, they are settling in Medina Munawwara. So every Ansari sahabi in Medina is offering him his home, offering him wealth, and half-half. Home, if I got a double story, half is mine, half is yours. If I got properties, half are mine, half are yours. Imagine the type of generosity they were embraced with. It's like unimaginable. Can't imagine this type of, this level of generosity. You won't have it brothers and brothers. You won't have it in a father and a son. Do you hear of a father, he's young and he's strong and his son is coming around. So when I come in, I'll give you half. Not even as a partner. One is, you come in as a partner, so the father has got a matlab in his mind. Yeah, I'll make him a partner in the business and he'll share half my fikr and my concerns. Half my responsibilities will be shifted to him. So on account of him taking responsibility of the fikr, as a reward, as a gesture, you'll give him half. But just like that, mahala, to shift him half your assets, you don't even hear of it. And these Ansari Sahaba are prepared to do this much. Half the property, half the wealth. In fact, this Sa'd ibn Rabi, radiyallahu anhu, who had paired up, was paired up by Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, Abdul Rahman ibn Auf, radiyallahu anhu, his generosity was beyond. He suggested to Abdul Rahman ibn Auf, radiyallahu anhu, see, I've got two wives, right? And you'll have to settle. But I can understand the predicament you are in. If you are prepared, look at any one of my wives. If you are interested in one of them, I will divorce the one that you are interested. She'll complete her iddat, and then you can marry her. With her consent, obviously. But look at the level of generosity, how they were embraced with. This is on account of the fact that they had left Makkah Mukarrama solely for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. No other reason. No other material gains. Right. So this hijrat will continue. It doesn't mean it lasted in the time of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and the hijrat is ended. It will continue. The second condition for this hijrat to be acceptable is this, that مِن بَعْدِ مَا ظُلِمُ وَالَّذِينَ هَاجَرُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ مِن بَعْدِ مَا ظُلِمُ. So for a transitory period, you go through some difficulty, you're relocating, adjusting to the area, to the new environment that you are, it will take you some time to relocate, it will take you some time to settle down. Right? Number three is this, الَّذِينَ صَبَرُوا. In that difficulty, then you will be patient as well. You don't become restless now. You just relocated and straight away you want things to work out for you. That's not the way. Rather you relocate, and you are patient until Allah Ta'ala arranges for you. You are quite comfortable. You are at ease at mind. You don't become uneasy. You don't go into a state of panic and hysteria. What's going on? You know? I've come here. I don't find the welcome. I don't find the type of reception that I expected. So you don't become hysterical. Rather, you are relaxed. And number four is this, that you trust firmly in Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala. The Sahaba Ikram say that we just move from Makkah to Medina and then you are millionaires. Because the niyat was right. They had conformed to all those requirements and conditions. Then suddenly you see Khaybar is already conquered. Then you see Banu Qurayza, Banu Nazir is being conquered. Then you see the Roman Empire and Persian Empire, all the wealth is just rolling in Medina Munawwara. They don't know what to do with that wealth. So much of wealth. Persian carpets, you know, embedded with stones, precious stones and rubies and diamonds. These things are coming in Medina Munawwara and just lying in the streets there. So they had that type of wealth. Right? Now, these are the conditions that would qualify you to migrate, to leave your country, to go and live in another country. Right? One is the condition, one is the reward, right? So you understood the reward. But what are the conditions? What must be the circumstances that will qualify your migration? So they give approximately 5 or 6 conditions that will qualify your migration, leaving one land, moving on and settling in another land. One is this, that it becomes difficult for you to practice your deen freely. A woman cannot wear her niqab. A man cannot fulfill his deeni obligations. Can't fulfill it. Right? There is so much of problems, so much of spanners on the path, there is so much of obstructions on the way, that your deeni obligations you cannot fulfill. You cannot accomplish. You want to do it, but they will not just allow you to fulfill your obligations. Number one, right? Number two is this. The second situation can be, if that land that you are residing in is infested with bid'at, right? Bid'at can be of different types. Sometimes it is a bid'at, like you got the Shias, etc. Then they are hurling abuse against the Sahaba-i-Kiram. That's part of their religion. It's part of the makeup of the religion to revile. Revile who? The pioneers of deen. So if you are not reviling them, then you can't be a Shia. If you want to be a Shia, then one of the preconditions and the prerequisites is the people that were the pioneers of deen, that brought down deen to you, you have to revile them, you have to hurl abuse against them. So that's the first requirement. Right. So it's a land that is crowded with bid'at, right? It's either the Sahaba-i-Kiram, or thereafter, you have to revile the pious people that brought down religion to you. Pious ulama, mashayikh, etc. were responsible to bring down religion to you. So either you're hurling abuse, or you are led to have some suspicions and reservations about them. You don't have the same level of respect for them like a normal Muslim would have. Like you talk of the imams, 4 imams, then you have a respect for them. You talk about the people that brought hadith, then you have respect for them, right? People that brought in tafsir, for example, you have a level of respect for them. You talk of the tabi'in, tabi' tabi'in, you have a level of respect for them. So now this cult is teaching you to eliminate and to delete that level of respect that you have, either for the Sahaba or the Tabi'in or the Imams that brought down Deen to you or the Imams that brought down Hadith to you. So you are being taught and you are being brainwashed into having some type of a reservation, suspicion and doubt about them. So now this also qualifies, in fact, it makes it compulsory for you to leave that land. First also is a compulsory, it's compulsory for you to leave that land. And the second also is make sure leaving compulsory. Because if you're going to be in a town or in a country where this is the status quo, right? Then tomorrow you can become a victim as well. Everybody discussing the same thing, right? When they're discussing wrong things and the practices are wrong, then you can also become a victim to this thing. Everywhere you're going, anywhere you're going is kawali. Anywhere you're going is just urus. Is Niyaz, right? Agyarvi Sharif. So every second, third day, all these things are carrying on. So, when you're going to be living in a community, then you're going to be interacting, you're going to be socializing with those people. When you're going to be socializing with those people, there's going to be marriages, etc. between yourselves. Now he's calling you for your Niyaz Sharif. Right? Now your daughter is married there, or your son is married there. Can you avoid? Now, on the one hand, you think, now I need to save my son's marriage, I need to maintain the relationship. So I don't want to spoil the relationship. But on the other hand, you also understand that this is not the right type of thing, not the right type of gathering. But you are living in that community. When you're living in that community, then overall you get consumed into their customs, into their ways. You can't avoid their ways. So then they will tell you now, you move on. And you can see that the Sahaba-i-Kiram are being reviled. You can see that you're going to be consumed in this type of alien culture, then you move away. Don't stick around there. Move up from there. The third condition is where there's going to be an abundance of haram. Everywhere you look, it's only haram. Haram activities that are carrying around. Woman, illicit behavior, right? Wherever you're going, the workplace, that's illicit behavior. Immodest, immorality, totally illicit type of behavior carrying on. Impurity, right? Dealings are not right. It's haram all over. Now you want to buy a loaf of bread, you're not sure that loaf of bread that you are purchasing is right or not right. Because the abundance of haram, you don't know whether they used lard as an ingredient in that or not, right? You're buying something, some type of a confectionery or whatever it is, and you don't know that they use some type of a wine into the manufacture and processing of that art item, right? So there's an abundance of haram. To go and get the type of halal that you need, or to live in a halal environment, you don't find that. Illicit behavior, wrong type of behavior, dishonest type of people, thieving, robbing, cheating, etc. Where all these type of haram, interest, etc. becomes like the status quo, it's a norm in that society. Now when interest is so free-flowing, and the haram is so freely available, you can also become a victim. And they will coerce you, and they will invite you from different perspectives. If you don't insure yourself, and you don't get into a bank facility, then you can't live here. Then you may restrain for some time, then your brakes and your resistance will weaken. You got the brakes now, but then it's so overwhelming. You must do some interest. You must have a facility. You must do this thing here. And how are you going to live? How are you going to survive here? So the tide of haram is so strong, that for you to resist now is becoming difficult. So it's either your friends and your community and family, or it's either your deen, one of the two you have to choose. That's the third thing that will qualify, in fact, make your leaving that land compulsory. That's the third situation. The fourth is this, where for some reason or the other, you're being pursued unjustly. You feel within yourself that you're being pursued, and you're being pursued unjustly. So then too, this also qualifies you leaving that land. Musa alayhi salam, Allah Pak speaks about him, فَخَرَجَ مِنْهَا خَائِفًا يَتَرَقَّبْ. You're being pursued and unjustly. He knows that the procedures there in the country is not right. When the procedures are not right, then he will be victimized. So when he's going to be victimized, then he rather escape from that land, and he moved on from that land. فَخَرَجَ مِنْهَا خَائِفًا يَتَرَقَّبْ قَالَ رَبِّ نَجِّنِي مِنَ الْقَوْمِ الظَّالِمِينَ. Oh Allah Ta'ala, save me from the clutches of these zalims. They're going to, if they apprehend me, then they're going to subject me to some type of zulm, some type of torture, or some type of merciless treatment. So Allah Ta'ala, save me from these zalims. So that's the fourth reason that will not only qualify, in fact, make your leaving important, right? Then the fifth reason for you leaving is where you feel that the climatic conditions are not agreeable, not suitable, right? Right. The incident of the Irniyin, they came to Medina Munawara, and here the conditions, climatic conditions for these people were not suitable, and they were asked to go and live in the outskirts of Medina Munawara until their health was restored. So they were allowed. Like in our context, someone is living in a seaside town, so because of the humidity levels being high, he can become a victim of asthma, for example. Humidity levels are a little bit high, and he'll find breathing a little bit difficult. So for him then to leave that land and to move elsewhere is permissible. You will say it's justified, right? But overall, when you look at this whole plan of the Sharia, so the Sharia wants three things to be in place. For your being deeply comfortable, and for you being deeply secured, you know, secured in your deen, then Sharia is looking at three things. Look at the broad outlook of the Sharia. What the Sharia wants? The Sharia wants that you should be secure in your deen in the land that you are living. But in order for you to be secure in the land that you are living, then you need to have three type of systems in that place where you are, right? One is, you need to have a good level of instruction, of ta'aleem, right? And if there is not a good level of instruction of ta'lim, then you do not know what is haram and halal. You don't know what is haram and halal. You can be divorcing your wife and you can be still living because you don't know. Right? You do not know that ghusl, for example, is a compulsory condition, it's a precondition for your namaz being valid. Because you're not exposed to ilm, you're not exposed to ulama, etc. So you don't know that ghusl is a precondition for your namaz to be valid. So you can be requiring a compulsory bath and just performing your namaz, thinking your namaz is alright, is valid. You can become a problem for you. You don't know what are the shari parameters in distributing and dividing an estate. You can be encroaching on someone else's right and you don't know about it. Why you don't know about it? Because there isn't that type of ulama that are accessible in that place. You can't go and access them. You can't even find out that is this haram, is this halal, is this right what I'm doing or not right. Am I eating up my sister's right? Or am I eating up my brother's right? Or is someone encroaching on my rights? I don't know it. I just know I got a will here, I'm reading it. Whether that will is compliant, not compliant, that doesn't concern me. I feel that I got a compliant will, it's enough. It's compliant to what? It's not compliant to Islam, it's compliant to some other system. That other system is, some other system is an alien system. If that alien system says that something is right, it doesn't make it right. That alien system will say, you are allowed to have a liquor store, right? It allows you. They say, we allow you also to have a conventional bank system. But because of them endorsing a conventional banking system, does that become legal and permissible? For them justifying and allowing you the opening of a bottle store, does the income from that become permissible? Halal? No. For them endorsing that the way you will structure your will, right, we accept it, we acknowledge it, will that will become permissible? Doesn't become permissible. If you wrote in your will, for example, right, that all my assets must go to my wife, right, it's not permissible for her, then it will mean that she's eating haram. She was only entitled, if you had children, that she was only entitled to 1/8. Instead of her taking 1 million from 8 million, she's wiped off the whole 8 million. So the 7 million that she's eating is pure haram. It's zulm what she's doing, it's haram what she's doing. She's a party to the guna, as well as you that wrote out that haram will, both are going to be in trouble. The hadith says it so clearly, that a man is worshipping Allah Ta'ala for 60, 70 long years. Then he approaches death. When he's approaching death, then he's doing something wrong. When he's doing something wrong, he is heading for the Jahannam. He just died now, and he thought, now I am over everything. And before he could relax, he's gone into a bigger problem. Before he could just chill down in Jannat or something, now he's heading on for bigger problems. You see? So you need an environment that is got the right Islamic instruction. You know your borders, you know your parameters. Person is living in haram, he doesn't know about it. He's divorced his wife, and he feels nothing about it. He felt, well, I just warned her. I didn't mean to divorce her, I just warned her. I gave her some talaqs. I didn't mean to divorce her. But he was doing this. Somebody is having a wedding function, and is splashing so much of wealth. And he feels I can do it, because splashing that wealth is relative. These are the type of words they use. It's relative, right? Man has got 100,000, so he's spending 10,000 on the wedding, right? But I got 100 million, so I'm spending 10 million on that thing. So it's just a matter, it's a relative thing. So how he will justify himself? Now, in all that, the type of wastage that goes in, the type of extravagance that goes in, the type of show that goes in, he is not concerned about it at all, not in the least. But I must have the status symbol that I did such a function to this level. Right? I must have that type of recognition. So now all this is because of him then not contacting people that will give him that type of dini instruction and guidance. When he kept himself at a distance, he got distanced away. So you need that environment to be Islamically friendly, understanding of deen. Unfortunately, we don't have the understanding of deen. And sometimes, that little bit of understanding we have, then suddenly we become the authorities in deen. One is we don't have that understanding in deen. And then those that have a little bit of understanding of deen, then they feel that they have the authority over deen. Now, look how people confuse, how they complicate things, right? Man has got a business, came last week or something, came for a business. So, he wants his son to come and join him up in the business, right? Son feels, no, I can't cope with my father, I can't manage, because he's got a different temperament, I've got a different temperament, and I don't think we'll be able to work. Because I know if I'm going to be there, there's going to be some fights, there's going to be some misunderstanding. So I asked him, by that, as far as his personal service and attention is concerned, are you robbing him in any way? He needs any type of khidmat, any type of service and attention. Are you robbing him? No, I give him all the khidmat, all the type of service that he requires, I am offering it to him. So he said, well, you have done your equal share. The service that you were supposed to provide him, you have done that. His khidmat, what he wanted, you have provided. Now he doesn't want khidmat for himself. He wants khidmat for his shop and business. See, he wants you to attend this, to come to the business, so that his digits can be changed. Now, I got my son now, from 10 million it can become 100 million. So, boy, that is not your father's khidmat. Father's khidmat is something else, differently. Look at his welfare, his well-being, his mental ease, etc. You look at that. His mind and his tawajju is totally different. His mind is on turning the digits. So once he wants to turn the digits, he wants you to become an accomplice. Like he's running after that, so you must also run after it. Now this is not called khidmat, you see. Now we'll use the, you know, you don't make my khidmat, Allah has lanat on you. It's family, you know, family comes first. You must look for family first. Now, it's a colossal misuse, abuse of the Sharia. You didn't understand it. A little bit of information, though, you misuse and you abuse the authority that Allah Pak has blessed you. And unnecessarily, unfortunately, you have then corrupted the mind of your child. Child says, hey, now I can't live. It's so difficult. Sharia is so difficult. So difficult to work in the Sharia. Who's caused this confusion is the father. And why he's caused the confusion? Because he didn't have the understanding. And why he didn't have the understanding? Because he didn't connect with the right type of ulama. See the confusion he brought. The son knows if I'm going to join up, this is going to be a problem. Right? And in the meanwhile, whatever the father needs, that needs are being fulfilled with respect, with honor, attention, wealth, whatever his requirements are, I'm seeing to that. Now he doesn't want me for his khidmat. He wants me for the khidmat of his own business. See, sometimes it is the khidmat of his business, sometimes it's the khidmat of his own integrity and pride. Hey, there's a function here and you're not coming in. So, his khidmat is not his khidmat that is involved, it's the khidmat of his integrity and pride. So when it's the integrity and the pride, that doesn't refer to his khidmat. It doesn't connect to his khidmat. Rather than to drag the person into this and then use your authority over that, is a colossal misuse, is abuse of the Sharia. They don't even know it. It's jahalat and compounded jahalat. When I say it's jahalat, what the Sharia is talking about, obedience to parents, respect to them, in what respects? To see to them that they are comfortable, they are relaxed, you have given them the love, you have given them that warmth, etc., etc., right? But if the man is gone in a madness of wealth now, and now he wants to make his child also mad in that wealth, then really he's misunderstood deen. He's using deen for his convenience. And then he wants to curse the child. See, they don't want to listen to me. See, now Allah's lanat is going to be on them. Now it happens to fathers, it happens to husbands as well. It happens to fathers, it happens to husbands as well. How it happens to husbands? Someone will ask, now how it happens to husbands? Man is doing zulm. Right? How is he doing zulm? He is doing zulm like this, that he is looking at all type of sites. Right? He is looking at all type of sites, and then he is arousing himself. Now the wife is distancing herself. Right? Now he says, no, you know, you distance yourself, the whole night the malaika will curse you. Now she has got a reservation. Okay, you aroused yourself. Mentally, you are with the person that you saw on that side. Physically, you are coming and offloading onto me. You see her grievance, her complaint. And physically, where are you? Physically, you are with me. But mentally, where are you? Emotionally, where are you? Emotionally, you are with that person that you saw on that side. And that arousal that has now accumulated, it's overloaded. Now you will come and dump it onto me. Mentally, you'll be with her. Physically, you'll be with who? See? Now, is she justified in what she's saying? If it was your daughter, would you appreciate such a thing? Now, that Shariat has become such a thing that is a thing of convenience. Now, the husband says, the whole night Allah's curse will be on you. The whole night Allah's curse is on you. But you don't understand that so much of curse of Allah Ta'ala you have incurred upon yourself for the wrong that you have been doing. So, the first thing I say is, you will have to have an environment which is dini, ta'limi friendly, right? That's the first requirement that you will need. The second thing that you will need, when you migrate, when you move on, right? Or you're living in any place for that matter, the second thing, one is this I showed you, dini, ta'limi friendly. Then the second thing you will need to have is dini, tarbiyati friendly. You will have to have the right dini values. In the crowd of people that you are living and interacting, they need to have the right type of dini values. Right? Either that is accessible, you can acquire it, or people are practicing and all got right values. Right? Now you look at the people that you are living around, they have got that level of purity. Purity of heart, purity of intention, purity of the dealings, purity of the eyes, purity of the ears, of their tongue. They are pure and clean in that respect. So, they got the dini values they have got. Right? You look at them, then they have got the purity of the heart, purity of the eyes. Then they are living lives that are modest. Right? So, they got the values right. Now, you may say, what's so important about living in a people that are modest and that are pure? Now, simply put, if you're going to be living with the people that don't have these values, then he'll be flirting with your wife, and you'll be flirting with his wife in each other's presence. Now, I ask you, that in a Western community, isn't this an acceptable behavior? Isn't this an acceptable behavior? Now, the problem with the West is this, they have got certain standards, right? Then that standards that they have got, they want to force it onto the whole world. You've got a standard, right? Keep your standard, but keep it to yourself. But don't force it onto the rest of the world. Now look at this France story, right? The France story, whatever happened, whoever killed whoever. First of all, it seemed like a fabrication. Right? Because it's unimaginable that a big company, corporate, major corporate, anyone can go through it like this. He can weave his way exactly to the spot that he needs those people, calls them up and shoot them. It looks like a film, film some story up. Really, it's like a film, like a bioscope. How they put the actors all in place and all that. How they do it, it's all a film. Right. But even if it was right, then too I say, there is a major discrepancy here. What is the major discrepancy? Now look at Western standards compared to other people's standards. A Western standard is, if it's that person's wife, then you must congratulate her, you must embrace her, you must compliment her about her beauty, embrace her, talk to her about her beauty, etc., right? Embrace her, give her a kiss. The husband feels very, very grateful, he feels honored, hey, you respected my wife. Now, it's their value, right? It's their value, it's their system, right? Amongst us, it's totally rejected. If you forget you touching my wife, you mustn't even look at her. I feel insulted. I feel embarrassed. I feel dishonored. For them, it's an acceptable thing. For them, it's a thing of honor. For us, it's a disrepute, right? Now, it's a failure of these people's standards to understand people's emotions and feelings, right? If it is, for example, a black, right? And you flirted with his wife, or you embraced her, gave her a kiss. It won't be strange, this person will pull out a gun and shoot you. And that person will praise you. For you flirting with his wife, or praising his wife, or embracing, giving her a kiss and all that, praising her for her beauty, he's going to compliment you, and this one is going to shoot you. Now, if the law comes and says, you know, you have no right to shoot this person here, he complimented your wife, according to our standards, it's a compliment, it's something that you're supposed to be doing. Now, you will say, no, my standards are all mixed up. His values are different, and our values are different. If you are going to respect their values, then respect our values as well. So I see it's a colossal mixture of all values. Values all gone into a kachumar, and whatever they felt is a value, they made that the standard, and then they want to force that value onto the next. Now, will you call that justice? Don't call that justice. In India, there was a court case, in the time of the English. So it happened, like I say, in the Shia, part of the faith, the makeup of the faith is to revile and insult the Sahaba-i-Kiram, right? Except for about 10 Sahaba-i-Kiram, all of them you're supposed to be reviling, hurling abuse. Then you are a Shia, otherwise you can't, right? So they had one of those sessions, they call it a Tabarra session, and one of the Sunnis got angry about the whole thing and he went and shot the Shia. So it was brought to court. Now the Shia defendant, whoever was defending the dead, he says, you see, your majesty, in your constitution you have got that there is complete religious freedom in this land. When there is total religious freedom in this land, then our religion commands us that we must revile and we must hurl abuse against the Sahaba-i-Kiram. So we did according to the parameter of the constitution. The constitution allows us the freedom of religion. When it allows us the freedom of religion, then this is within the parameter of the constitution. He had no right to come and kill this person. So now, on the Sunni side, the attorney stood up to defend his client. He says, yes, he acted within the parameter of the constitution, but the constitution, it guarantees everybody's right. Everybody's equal in the eyes of the law, everybody's equal. When everybody is equal in the eyes of the law, he acted within the parameter of the constitution, and I also have acted, or my client also has acted within the parameter of the constitution. Because the constitution says that you have got religious freedom. And our religion says, our Sunni religion says, that if anybody dishonors, reviles, and hurls abuse against the Sahaba-i-Kiram, then he must be killed. So I have also acted within the parameter of the constitution. The constitution is guaranteeing freedom of religion. So freedom of religion. So I acted also freely. He acted also freely. The case is thrown out, you see. At least in that zamana, those English had some akkal, you know, some brains they had. So they had to throw the case out because this person was acting also within the parameters of the constitution. If he's got a constitutional right, I got a constitutional right. He's got a right to freely vent his feelings. He's got a right also to freely vent his feelings. So they had no way to secure the other person's emotions. Like I say, one class of people's emotions are being secured. Your emotions, your feelings, and respected. But the other class, are their emotions secured and respected? Say, no, I got the right to say what I need to say. Right? Now this person is feeling to himself, well, I got no rights what? If someone is hurling my mother, or it's my father, or someone that is very dear, near to me, what does the law expect? I mean, the law must expect me to just keep quiet and just observe like a spectator. I can't do that. So that means the law doesn't have any mechanism to look after the emotions of people. No mechanism. No way to look after the emotions. What will you say? That the law is flawed. The international law is flawed. They need to secure this. Like they secured the freedom of speech, they need to also understand that they need to protect people's emotions as well. Feelings as well. Like people's wealth are something that is supposed to be secured, then the integrity is also something that is supposed to be secured and protected and guarded. You can't just go and trample and go and run down people's integrity and respect. So, the second thing that you need in an Islamic friendly environment, first thing I explained, that there must be Islamic instruction. The second thing, it must also be Islamic tarbiyat. Islamic value, when you say tarbiyat, the right values. Like I said, right values, there's purity. There's chastity and there's modesty all around. Otherwise, if there's not chastity and modesty all around, then your child can also become a victim. If they are going to school, children or daughters are going to school, right? Firstly, they were not supposed to be going. But that child is watching, whether she is in school or she is in varsity, she is watching the ambience and the surrounding in the university, then she becomes a prey to that. She becomes a victim. One in a thousand is pure and clean. And the rest of them, they're getting messed up. Either the full way, halfway, quarter way, but at some point they're getting messed up. They're going into that environment, you threw them into the environment, and then you say, now, resist yourself. See? But you know, 9 out of 10, they're gonna get spoiled, they're gonna get affected. When they're gonna get affected, then you're gonna pay very, very seriously for it, you see. See, now we don't realize that these values also, they have a consequence. When the values are down, then they have a consequence, and then you have to suffer the consequence. So the second thing is then, you need to have Islamic values. Now Islamic values, for example, I showed you two, right? Now a third value of Islam is we need to cooperate, we need to respect. That we hold it, we entrench it into our constitution. We respect, and not only do we respect, but we cooperate, right? For example, someone passed away, then the whole community is cooperating, doing the janaza, getting the body, making the ghusl, doing everything. Don't we cooperate? Someone is ill, etc. We need to cooperate. Now the Western value is everybody must be independent. You die, you must die yourself. You suffer, you must suffer in isolation. Right? The father separates himself from the son when the son is growing up, and the son separates himself from the father. Both have divorced themselves. They have separated themselves from each other. You're going to die yourself, and I will die myself. Going to an old age, and we are saying, no, you cooperate. You show love, you show respect. The more the person is getting aged, he's becoming old, then you need to show him respect, you need to show him warmth, you need to show him love. And their value is totally different. So do you have a value system? If you don't have that value system, then are you working to bring about a value system? Either you have it. And if you don't have it, then you'll move to another land. And if you can't move to another land, then are you working towards bringing up that type of an environment which has got the right type of values? Otherwise, if today this person's father has been thrown out of the home into an old home, then tomorrow you are a father, you can also be thrown out. You can also be living a life in isolation, totally cold life. It can happen to you as well. So you will have to work with cooperation. We'll have to learn to love, respect and love. So this is a third very important integral value in an Islamic system. You don't have it, then you have to bring it. Right. So the first requirement, you'll call it talim or madrasa. Right? Madrasa will give you the instruction. The second aspect will be given to you by a khanqa. What is the khanqa's work? To entrench real intrinsic values into your system. Systems that become alien or become confused and become all mixed up. Now you need to distinguish the systems. This is what belongs to us, and we need to see that this system prevails. We're loving, we're cooperating, we're respecting, we have that level of modesty and shame. We have that level of purity and cleanliness. See? For them there is no such thing like cleanliness. See? You will see it. Men will have a proper bath. Then he will go to a urinal, he will do whatever, his hand is messed up, or his body, then he's going to eat. For him, nothing else. I'm so clean and pure. Now, their system of cleanliness is totally different. It's alien to us. If they need to bath, for example, then they fill up the bath. I imagine the whole back is plastered, right? When it's plastered, now they're going into the bath. When they're going into the bath, that whole water is contaminated. And that water is being drunk, it's been consumed, the whole body is napak, because the whole water is napak. It's a small tub, it's not 10 by 10 or anything. Small tub, right? So you're putting yourself into that, you're clogging that place, and then you're bathing yourself. Obviously, front is napak, back is napak, that same water is being consumed, the whole body is napak. So they don't have a system of paki napak at all. They don't have a system of purity. So your system is totally different, their system is totally different. So you identify your system from their system. They don't have a system for purity. They don't have a system for modesty and clean lives. They don't have a system for respect. They don't have a system for cooperation. They don't have a system for showing love and muhabbat. If anything, if they have to show love, then with a price. That's a system. Even if you go to their shops, right, and that attendant had given you something, some service, that he wants a tip for it. So there is nothing for mahala there. So there is no cooperation, no love, nothing. So even if they give you some word of respect, then that word of respect that they give you is put into the bill, right? That hostess, she will show some respect and all that. Yes sir, what do you want? All that. It's all put into your bill. It's not coming for free. And here we're saying that's part of your makeup. You need to show respect to that old man, to that young, to that poor, to that weak, to that destitute. We'll say it's part of your old makeup, part of your old culture. And they will say, no, nothing comes for free. So that's the second thing. See, this value system will be entrenched, will be encouraged, and will be pushed by the Khanqa. The Khanqa will encourage. This is the whole theme of the whole work, to bring in systems. That the small must respect the elder. The elder will show mercy towards the young. There will be a level of purity. There will be a level of fairness, and there will be a level of justice. Otherwise, the justice also will be corrupt. The system of justice will also be corrupt. How will it be corrupt? Now, the attorney is only looking, how can I beat the law? He is not looking whether justice is prevailing. This is my client, and I need to see that my client wins the case. Whether he is wrong or not wrong, that is not my business. I must get the money out of him, and I must win the case. How must I do it? So every individual is thinking like this. Some years back, 20, 30 years back, you know. I'll show you now. You know, it's just a question of how to beat the law. One person, he brought in a container, right? And he told his China supplier that this is shoes that I want, this is the specs. This is how you must do it. So everything was landed, it came to him. He was then seen. Inspector, this was all calculated, all worked out, all orchestrated, right? When all orchestrated, he saw all the shoes are just right. Right. All right. Now, before he could do all this, he went and worked out a proper insurance scheme for 10, 15 million, right? Everything he did. Top class shoes, he got them to invoice it at a certain price, and all landed here, right? Now he went to the insurance, claiming that 10, 15 million. You see, so, everything is worked out just to fit within the law. So you don't have any respect for the law. Eventually it's what it will bring you to. You don't have any respect. But how can you just work yourself so that you can get the law to give a decision in your favor? How to work yourself? How to? Islam is saying something totally different. We got a different system. We work different. We analyze different. We reason different. And their reasoning is totally different. Now, if we're going to not have our own independence, right, in this respect, what's going to happen? We feel, hey, I can do the same thing. Person here, from 1 mil, he got 20 mils now. Hey, how he played, how he worked the law, he got 20 mils to his account. How did he got it? From where he was and how did he get it? And then, he won't end up there. Then you see him in a wali, he hey, you know how I got that 20 mil? And he'll give the whole story how he did, the whole bayan will give it. I ask you, do these things happen or not? How he beat the law and how he brought that money, how he got the thing worked out, how he got it. He'll go and he'll brag about the thing, he'll boast about it. Whereas all haram, all impure, all disgusting behavior, but they brought it onto themselves because of interaction of this type of community. Living with that type of people, associating, interacting, socializing with them, how to beat the law. So this is the second thing, right? So this effort you'll call the Khanqa effort, right? Then you'll have a third effort. And the third effort is now, see all this what you have gained in the madrasa, the talim, then you got these values. Now both these things have to be not only sustained, but you have to work out a succession plan for it. Not only have you to sustain it, the talim has to be sustained, that values have to be sustained. Not only sustained, but a succession plan. I need to think about it, because this is obligation, this is why we are sent here for. Just now, it's going to be my children, my progenies to come. And what succession plan have I got in place for the progenies to come? So the talim has to be in place, the values have to be in place, and there must be a succession plan in place as well. One is what we have got to sustain that, to sustain it. If you don't have it, then get it. And if you've got it, then sustain it. One is you don't have it. This is the whole, now the third effort. If you don't have it, then bring it. And if you have it, then sustain it. And not only sustain it, but work out a succession plan for the future as well, for the coming generations. Now this is a third effort, completely different from the first and the second. This is a third effort. Now this third effort is called the tabligh and dawat effort. That if you don't have that awareness of deen, then create that awareness of deen. Bring that awareness and sustain. Your deen itself won't sustain yourself, and then not only sustain yourself, then work out a succession plan for the generations to come. Because if you didn't work out a succession plan for the generations to come, or you didn't sustain yourself in that environment, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? You know what will be the end result? You know, let me just give one small little story, right? Real story. About 3 days ago, one Abhay Saab came to me. He's running some office classes and all that. So he says to me that I want to group, I got some office classes, I got good students, capable students, but for the month of Ramadan, I want to take them all overseas to South America, and there is hardly any hafiz there, hardly any tarawih there, so at least they'll fill up, you know, they'll fill up into the different masajid or different jamaat khanas and musallas, and they will do some work there. Alright. So I asked him, Bhai, how do you find the environment there for a youngster 18, 19, 20 years of age? How do you find the environment? He said, Mawla, you caught me by surprise. But now you ask me the question, I'll tell you the fact. So I was there at the airport. I won't mention the country, but one of the South America. But overall, they are the same. He says, we were there at the airport, and we saw a young woman, totally stark naked. Just one small shirt, open, completely open. Otherwise, the whole body is naked. And the most surprising thing was, nobody was staring at her. Everybody was staring at us because of our kurta, and my wife being in niqab. Everybody, the whole world was looking at us. But nobody looking at them. Now you see, whereas you look at all these people here, there's about 40, 50 million Arab Muslims that were living there. And I'll see, the whole culture has changed. When the whole culture changed, the mindset has changed. Now that haram, that filth, right, they had no succession plan. Now the progenies that are there, where are they now? Can you see how they lost? So you'll have to sustain yourself, and not only sustain yourself, but work out a succession plan for the generations to come. In a nutshell, what this will all mean, that there will have to be a group of people, a very good, reliable group of people, who day and night, there's no chain for them. They're not relaxed. At no given time, they're working out solutions all the time. What's the problem and how do we find a solution? What's the problem? They have to identify the problem and work out a solution. Identify a problem and work out a solution. That will be like an obsession for them. Allah Pak Tawfiq.